frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Tom Horn, who, of course, is a minister. He's a minister of the gospel. But in recent years, he's been Anomalous Publishing. He publishes books, and he's written a number of books. Some of the older ones we still carry, those dealing with the spiritual aspect of what's going on. But Tom, the research you're doing at the present time is quite different than much of what you've done before, and how you're talking about conspiracies, in fact, about spiritual conspiracies. And certainly I've read your latest book. In fact, I was flattered you asked me to write the introduction to it, Apollyon Rising 2012. But how did you get into really going into the secret societies and the mystery religions of antiquity?
Well, by the way, Dr. Monteith, what a privilege to be back on the air with you. As always, and I mean, look, you know, not to put too much of an esoteric spin on it, I had been a pastor, you know, for 25 years. I had been an executive in a large evangelical, well, the largest evangelical organization in the world for almost 30 years during the same time I was pastoring. And, you know, there had been different things in history, American history, questions about secret societies, Freemasons, things like that, that, you know, I probably should have paid more attention to than I did. But I had really just kind of sidelined those issues, made it cursory, if you will. But something happened about a year ago, really, the light came on. But before that, it went back to the presidency of the Bush administration, all this talk about the coming of a new world order, and a series of events that we can, you know, just briefly state tonight occurred that actually caused the pieces of what I think is a very big puzzle to start falling together for me. Specifically, I'm talking about things like the Great Seal of the United States. I'm talking about iconic American history, and what all of these things did was confirmed that my naivety, really, my blind acceptance for so many years, especially of different controlled versions of American history, had been keeping me in the dark, had been keeping me blinded from the actual course that a network of hidden powers had set our nation upon over 200 years ago. And I would, Dr. Monteith, I would want to say from the very beginning that it is also true that many of the founding fathers, as well as a large number of the families and patriots that landed at Plymouth Rock and that settled this country, the United States, these were Christians, and they had a Christian concept and devotion to God. And I wouldn't want anybody hearing this interview tonight to think that I believe. Other than that, I would also say that just before I came on the air tonight, I had a called from my attorney, who is a former 32nd degree Mason, and I know that many of these lower degree Masons don't have any interest, you know, in an occult plan. But definitely in American history, there is also another side to that coin.
And I think that's so vitally important for people to understand that when America was created, yes, there were Christians here. They were the predominant force in our society, and in signing the Declaration of Independence and in signing the Constitution. But there was a small, well-organized group of people who were involved in the occult, in the study of the ancient mystery religions, who had an entirely different agenda. for America. And unfortunately, that agenda is in complete control today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Tom Horn. And Tom is a personal friend. We've come to know him through the years. And certainly he has actually republished our book, Brotherhood of Darkness, under his own publishing house, Anomalous Publishing. In fact, we very often will have authors from Anomalous on here. We had a Joseph Chambers on Monday afternoon. A number of people heard him and were very, very taken with what he had to say. But Tom has certainly been studying the occult, these strange forces which are shaping the course of the nation today. Many Americans, most Americans, would have heard George Bush's first and second inaugural addresses, George W. Bush, but they did not recognize the things that he talked about in the first address, the angel that rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm. If you read the speech, you'll find the words there, not once but twice. And so what is he talking about? And in the second inaugural address in 2005, January, when he talked about when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. And he concludes almost the entire talk with that thought. But, of course, most people don't understand what he was really talking about. I don't know whether he understood it, but certainly there were the people who wrote his speeches knew exactly what they were talking about, because it was a secret means of communicating with people from the dark side. Well, Tom, certainly you've been doing a lot of research on this, and you said that during the Bush administration, certainly some of the pieces of the puzzle began coming together for you. What did you mean by that?
Well, look, I'll try to make this very quick because, you know, this could get bogged down in a lot of details, and I'll just leave it for people to read. This new book, by the way, that you wrote the introduction to, and thank you very much, is titled Apollyon Rising 2012. And there'll be more information about that coming out later this year. But look, in brief summary, what triggered the fall of the dominoes for me started in 2001 when President Bush did what you said in that first inaugural address. He faced the obelisk known as the Washington Monument, and twice he referred to an angel that rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. And that reference was after the fact, when people were questioning about it. It was credited to Virginia statesman John Page, who had written to Thomas Jefferson after the Declaration of Independence was signed, saying that we know that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. Do you not think that an angel rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm? But for the modern Illuminati, this language has a much different meaning, and I'm very suspicious that it did also for the ancient.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris Tom was just talking about the reference in George Bush's first inaugural address. Remember, that would have been January in 2001, before the September 11th attack on the World Trade Center. But George W. Bush, facing the obelisk there in Washington, D.C., which is an occult monument, talked about the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. He referred to it on two occasions, and that's how he concluded his inaugural address. And I'm sure that probably close to a couple of 100 million Americans heard the speech and had no idea what he was talking about. But you pick up the story, Tom.
Yeah, and you know, the evidence to how important that reference was came out about 5 weeks after that inaugural, when on Wednesday, February 28th, Congressman Major R. Owens of New York stood up before the House of Representatives, and he actually prayed to the angel in the whirlwind. This can be looked up. He asked the spiritual force known as the angel in the whirlwind to guide the future and the fate of the United States of America. 28 weeks later, Dr. Montes, for a total of 33 weeks from that inaugural, a number that you know is invaluable to mysticism and occult fraternities, and that is viewed as an occult marker. Of course, the official story is 19 Islamic terrorists attacked the United States, hijacking four commercial airliners, crashing them into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York City. the third into the Pentagon, and the fourth one, which had been directed towards Washington, D.C., actually crashed near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. About what happened that day resulted, of course, not just in 3,000 immediate deaths, dozens of missing persons, but for the stage, I believe, being set for changes that would lead to the call for a new world order.
In fact, you know, one of the most interesting things, and, you know, I like to think I'm pretty much on top of things, but what you pointed out in your book, that it was 11 years to the day before the attack on September 11th, 11 years to the day when George Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, the father, a member of a secret society called Skull and Bones, also a member of the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, but George Herbert Walker Bush gave his initial speech talking about the New World Order. I mean, 11 years exactly to the very day.
That's right.
First mention of that, of course, it's often mentioned in the occult literature by Alice Bailey and certainly by H.G. Wells and other people who were involved with this world conspiracy. But here's the President of the United States using that term. In fact, I've read articles by people, you know, who were involved in the cult who said, gee, the first time I ever heard anybody publicly use those words was when George Herbert Walker Bush used that phrase, of course, on September 11th, 1990.
Well, and if anybody reads this book, I think they're going to be astonished at how the number of occult items, numbers, numerology, symbolism, how it stacks up to the point that by the time you're finished reading this book, you'll have a very difficult time admitting that either humans were in the know, or at a minimum there was something else that was operating behind the scenes. Because, Dr. Monteith, it would have to be in the order of hundreds of millions to one that the numerological coincidences, the symbolism that transpired on 9/11, and then what has happened since to put the world on course towards a new world order, that this would all be coincidence. And and what you're left with is the conclusion that if at an occult level, if before 9/11 you had leaders of truly dark powers that had determined that the ascendancy for what I in the book, of course, refer to as the New Atlantis, that this had arrived, then occult magical tradition would suggest that an event needed to be triggered and surrounding a mega ritual offering. I mean, are we talking about the people who died on 9/11? This would have to be something powerful enough to compel a series of events towards a universal call for order out of chaos, ordo ab chao. And it would have had to have accomplished a couple of things which also stand out in what has been happening within our society since then. Number one, embedding, literally burning unforgettable images into the minds of average citizens, uninitiated citizens, for the purpose of creating what's called contagious memes. This is self-replicating ideas that are transmitted from mind to mind through imitable phenomena like speech and symbols and rituals and gestures. This is a social phenomenon that most students of psychology understand, that something like this would be created in order to raise support for a, quote, war on terror, end quote, which would also include tolerance for things like diminishing domestic freedoms and so on, which we've been seeing since then until now. The second thing it would have been for would be to communicate to initiates around the world. I'm talking about the numerological coincidences, if I can use that term, on that day, would have been to communicate to those who are on the know around the world that the oracular date for the culmination of their New Atlantis had arrived. And so when you look at, you know, what some people have pointed out before this book that I'm writing, you've had people pointing out how the number 11 is known as the 11th hour. There were others who said that the terrorists that struck the United States did it on 9/11 because it matches the phone number in the U.S. that you would call during an emergency, 911. But after anybody reads this book, Apollyon Rising 2012, they're going to come away realizing that it is that 9/11, the speeches by Bush Sr. Before that date, during the U.S. presidency of Bush Jr., that this symbolism means much more than that. First of all, the number 11 is the first master number, and it represents a dark vision. When that's coupled or doubled to equal 22 in numerology, it means that the vision has been combined with action. And then thirdly, when it's tripled to 33, which is, of course, that magic number in Freemasonic mysticism and other mysticism, this becomes the signal of the highest, most important action in Freemasonry. It means vision and action have combined to produce accomplishment in the world. And so when you understand how that mysticism operates, then it's really not unreasonable to ask yourself if it was more than a coincidence that exactly 11 years to the date following George H.W. Bush's New World Order speech, that on September 11, 2001, Flight 11 crashed into the Twin Towers, whose appearance side-by-side form the number 11, and that Flight 11 hit the Twin Towers first, and Flight 11 had 11 crew members. New York was the 11th state added to the Union. New York City has 11 letters. Afghanistan, the first nation the United States attacked following 9/11, has 11 letters. George W. Bush has 11 letters. The Pentagon attacked on 9/11 has 11 letters. That list goes on, and pretty soon you begin to realize that there is something of what the people in the esoteric community call high strangeness was operating on that day.
And, of course, I think if anybody has any questions about what happened that day, remember there were 1,100 bodies that were never found, a little over 1,100. They just were vaporized. How do you, if the building came down, pancakes were told, how do you vaporize the bodies? I mean, how do you create all that dust, you know, where you pulverize all of the cement? Certainly if it pancaked, there would have been big blocks of cement there, but everything was pulverized at 1,100 bodies. It just were vaporized. No evidence of them has ever been found. How could that possibly have happened? But go right ahead.
Well, something extraordinary, something unusual was happening that day. There's another enlightening observation that was manifest that day that has to do with the number 77, which is also an additional twin master number that stood out during 9/11, where you had Flight 77 that hit the Pentagon, which is located on the 77th meridian. And the foundation stone for the Pentagon was laid in 1941 on September 11th in a Masonic ceremony. So there's a great deal there. But, Dr. Monteith, what could even be more important than those types of bizarre, I'm using the term coincidence loosely, obviously, but beyond those bizarre facts, I'll put it that way, is that 77 is also what is known in occult circles as an illuminated signal. And this is also true for the Masons in what is known as the Revenge of Lamech. Now, this is drawn from the book of Genesis, the fourth chapter, which says, "And Lamech said to his wives, if Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech 70 and sevenfold, or 77. Lamech was a descendant of Cain. He was the first murderer in the Bible, or Cain was the first murderer in the Bible. And Lamech was the father of Tubal-Cain. In Masonic mythology, he was a master craftsman. Now, in Masonic tradition, the lineage of Lamech is really important because he's considered to be the forefather of Harim Abiff, you know, the first grand master of the order of Masons, and the chief architect, according to their mythology, of the Temple of Solomon. But the name of Lamech's son, Tubal-Cain, is used as a title for a secret hand grip in Masonic ritual. And I can hear the music coming on, so if I can, I'll tell you why this is important following the commercial.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's so vitally important that people understand that there are secret societies. The Masons are an example, but the Rosicrucians are here, and the Theosophists, and the Skull and Bones, and we could give you a number of other secret organizations that are out there, the Order, that most people have never even heard of. They exist today, and they're not imaginary. And then, of course, the more prominent organizations like the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission. But if you study their origins, they're all tied into the occult desire for one world government. Well, Tom, go right ahead.
Well, we were talking about how that Lamech was a descendant of Cain, the first murderer in the Bible, how this is important in Masonic mythology, and how that the name of Lamech San Tubal-Cain is actually a title for a secret hand gripped in Masonic ritual. This is important because it bestows passage of the third degree Master Masons, or 33 degree Masons. And what's important about this in mystical belief is that the hand grips in Freemasonry is a kind of Luciferian antithesis to a biblical concept of virtuous power transference, you know, blessings through greetings or laying on of hands. You lay hands on somebody, you pray for them. Jesus touched somebody and he felt virtue go out of him, the Bible says. But in mysticism, the Mason is actually instructed to, quote, follow in the footsteps of his forefather, Tubal-Cain. This goes back to this laying on of hands within Masonic mysticism. In order to master what Manly P. Hall recorded as, quote, the seething energies of Lucifer that are in his hands, end quote. Manly Hall talked about that in The Lost Keys of Freemasonry. He said that the day had come when fellow craftsmen must know and apply their knowledge to the lost key to their grade is the mystery of emotion, which places the energy of the universe at their disposal, but that man could only be expected to be entrusted with great power by proving his ability to use it constructively and selflessly, etc. Then he said this, and this is important, quote, when the Mason learns that the key to the warrior on the block is the proper application of the dynamo of living power, he has learned the mystery of his craft. The seething energies of Lucifer are in his hands, and before he may step onward and upward, he must prove his ability to properly apply energy. He must follow in the footsteps of his forefather, Tubal-Cain, who, with the mighty strength of the war god, hammered his sword into a plowshare, end quote. Well,
Let me just comment, Tom, that comes from a book called The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, which is available through Radio Liberty. You have to specifically ask for the title because it's not in our catalog. But that's The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, written by Manly P. Hall, a 33rd degree Mason and one of the leaders of the Masonic movement in the United States up until the time he died in the early 1990s.
That's exactly right, and actually considered by the Freemasons to probably be their greatest philosopher of all time. I mean, there are entire buildings and museums dedicated to his knowledge. What was interesting about what he wrote was that this whole relationship between the hand grips, how this relates to the revenge of Lamech and the number 77, which also marked what had happened in New York City in 9-1-1, how this is connected to Lucifer, according to Manly P. Hall, and possessing the seething energies and loosing these seething energies, according to Manly P. Hall, and how that's also connected, according to the book that people can get through you. By the way, I'm glad you have that book. I was just wondering today.
Hold that, Tom. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest Tom Horn was just referring to a book that was written by Manly P. Hall, a leading Mason, probably the leading Mason of the last century, and his book called The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, where Mandy P. Hall talks about how, of course, when the warrior on the block has learned his craft, why he'll have the seething energies of Lucifer in his hands. And I just comment, we do have that book available through Radio Liberty. It's hard to get, but we carry that. We want people not to believe this, but to understand that there are people who do believe this, and, well, I'm not so certain that they can't obtain the seething energies of Lucifer and get great wealth and great power. They could even become, perhaps, a president of the United States. But, of course, at a terrible, terrible price, because, of course, we're talking about the loss of their soul for eternity. But, Tom, go right ahead.
Well, I'm glad, I was saying just before that break that I'm glad that people can get that book from you, but I was just wondering today, who people can get that book from. We're going to, later this year, be doing some heavy investing in promoting this book, Apollyon Rising 2012, and I want to also be able to make people aware of where they can get copies of some of these very important documents. It is a piece of American history. It is occultic. Obviously, we would not want people to espouse what is being taught by Manly Hall, or for that matter, a lot of the other things that are taught by above 33rd degree Freemasons, and as you said earlier, it isn't just Freemasons. They're just one part of a larger occult hierarchy, or at least some of the higher members in their organization are parts of that very term, occult hierarchy. I think that's a term you use in your book, Brotherhood of Darkness. But he was talking about, you know, harnessing this power of Lucifer, and he compares it to the mighty strength of the war god. And when you study Masonic history, you find that this war god is explained by different Masonic sources as a reference to the Roman god Vulcan, which is also very important because this is the son of Jupiter and Juno. He's a sun deity associated with lightning and volcanic fire, to whom human sacrifices had to be made. And when you look at this number 77 of what happened on 9/11, there is a deep picture here, a disturbing picture, that begins to emerge that something other than what the public has ever understood may have actually been occurring that day, dating back to signals being sent from our own president through his own speeches. But anyway, this connection with the seething energy of Lucifer, I mean, it makes sense given that the myth of Vulcan closely not only resembles the fall of Lucifer and his subsequent position on Earth from the biblical text, but there's been many different historical works that have provided evidence that Vulcan is actually identical with the biblical Satan. And I go into some of that in this book, but the point is, if the number 77 on September 11, 2001, was pointing to revenge upon the United States by the royal bloodline descendants of Lamech, then they were certainly following the footsteps of Tubal-Cain, releasing the seething energies of Lucifer and the strength of Vulcan, or Satan, to whom human sacrifices have to be made, because movement through and past the twin towers, or the pillars, in New York City is symbolically extraordinary, and most people to this day have no clue what the symbolism there represented, and it definitely was needed in order to initiate the culmination of the New Atlantis, the New World Order.
And this is what people do not understand. The ancient plan was this, that America would one day lead the world into the one world government. Why do you think we have over 750 bases throughout the world? Our troops stationed in 130 nations throughout the world. Why are we spending more money for our defense than all the rest of the countries in the world put together? Who are we defending ourselves against? Why do we have all this technology that's being used now, supposedly to, you know, originally purchased to spy on the Russians, and now it's being used to spy on the American people, those satellites up in the sky we maintain? to watch the American people. The GPS, of course, localizer in your car also allows them to know exactly where your car is. The technology in our cell phones have allowed them to listen to your telephone conversations even when the phone is turned off. And, of course, to know where you are when your cell phone's turned off. Project Echelon, and you can check it out on the Internet, Echelon, E-C-H-E-L-O-N, the NSA, National Security Administration program, to listen to all of your telephone calls and all read all of your faxes and emails, not just you. They're not picking you up. They're doing it all over the world. And now we're going to have identification cards for everyone in the world. Aw, shucks, I wonder why. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, I guess it's Tom Horn, and you really can't understand what's going on in the world today unless you understand the occult influence that permeates every aspect of our society, and whether it be our education, whether it be certainly the entertainment industry, or even some of the things that go on within our churches today have an occult foundation. But you pick up the story, Tom.
Well, we were talking before we went to the break about what had happened on 911, how this could have been, there could have been something operating behind the scenes that most people are not aware of and that certainly was not related to the so-called terrorists that attacked this country. And I'm not questioning whether or not terrorists did attack this country, but that a mechanism had been put into place. There's a really important narrative from Masonic legend. It's based partly on Talmudist and other traditions, where Enoch, and just bear with me here just for a second so this will make sense how it relates to 911 and occultism and what's been happening in this country for the last 8 years. Enoch, according to this mythology, is considered to be a father of Freemasonry. And this happens before he's translated into Metatron, or guess what? The angel in the whirlwind. And he is visited by his female counterpart, the Shekinah, another name that turns up during the Bush administration that had to do with our invasion of Iraq. And in this mythology, Enoch is given a vision of the end of the world. Now, because of his devotion to God, Enoch constructs 9 hidden vaults underground at Mount Moriah, the location of the Temple Mount. Now, these vaults are perpendicular, one atop the other, in which Enoch, according to this myth, deposits the most important ancient knowledge. In the deepest vault, the 9th vault, he places a triangular plate of gold that measures a cubit long on each side, bearing the secret ineffable name of God. Now, when the vaults of knowledge are complete, Enoch buries them. He covers them up with soil. And he erects 2 pillars on the site. These very much play into everything about Freemasonry. And on these twin pillars, on one of them, he inscribes the history and the arts and the sciences, what's called the doctrines of speculative Masonry in Freemasonry. And on the other one, he places hieroglyphic information.
Hold that thought, Tom. We'll be back here in just a moment as we bring all of our stations back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Chris Thomas simply talking about the symbology of Masonry, about Enoch, who, of course, at least according to mythology, is the father of modern-day Masonry. And, of course, certainly so many of the symbols we see in Masonry today can be traced back to Enoch, who, of course, supposedly had built 9 perpendicular vaults on Mount Moriah. That's, of course, where the Temple Mount is today. But you pick up the story there, Tom.
Well, he had built these, and then he constructed 2 pillars. He buried them, then he built 2 pillars, one on which he put the speculative doctrines of Freemasonry, according to the myth. And on the other one, he put down hieroglyphic information that pointed to where this treasure, where these vaults were buried nearby. Now, according to this legend, these pillars were nearly destroyed in the Great Flood. And the vaults were lost until the building of Solomon's Temple. Now, there are actually several degrees of the ancient Scottish Rite of Freemasonry that relate to this legend, to this story, including the Royal Ark of Enoch, also the Master of the Ninth Ark. And there are rituals in Freemasonry that are based on the time of the building of Solomon's Temple, in which the story unfolds that while they were preparing the site where they were going to build Solomon's Temple in Jerusalem, the vault or the Ark of Enoch is uncovered. I was at the House of the Temple recently. I took pictures where they have painted large murals on the wall inside the House of the Temple.
Now, for our listeners, that, of course, is in Washington, D.C., the Masonic Center right in the very heart of Washington, D.C., but go right ahead.
Depicting how that these Masons were lowered down into this vault where they find relics of the great pillar of knowledge. And then, of course, these relics are brought out and they're placed in what's called the Lodge of Perfection, which rules over the 13 lower degrees and so on. But there's different rituals within Freemasonry that are related to the legend of Enoch on Moriah, his preservation of the arts and sciences and the underground repositories, and the rediscovery of that during the building of the Temple of Solomon. Now, I brought this up to say that Enoch's pillars are one set of the three sets of pillars in Freemasonry. And each of these twin pillars, dual columns in Freemasonry, each one holds esoteric meaning. The first set of pillars at the entrance to the Masonic lodges, for instance, represent those of Solomon's Temple. And the initiates are seen as entering into a holy place, that is, the temple, when they pass through them. They have to go through them, walk between them, go past them, and enter in. The second set of pillars are those of Enoch, and they symbolize the initiate acquiring lost knowledge or secrets and esoteric power. And then finally, the twin pillars of Hercules, which actually represent venturing from the known to the unknown in search of a new epoch, that is, an epoch, a new world or a new world order, as in the quest to reach the Masonic Rosicrucian New Atlantis, which Francis Bacon had depicted as laying just beyond the twin pillars of Hercules. Now, for Americans and for learned people, I think, in America who may have some idea, some nervous appreciation for what had happened during 9-1-1, there is a very deep mystical meaning behind the symbolism of the twin pillars, or the towers, that fell that day, and what moving beyond them represents. I mean, you have researchers, like my friend David Bay at Cutting Edge Ministries, who have said publicly that the events surrounding 9-1-1 were, in their opinion, literally a catalyst for the last stage in the development of the Masonic Baconian dream of the New Atlantis. New Atlantis, of course, being what the Freemasons and Rosicrucian adepts of Bacon believed was the goal of the Americas, the ultimate goal, that the United States was to become the New Atlantis. And, of course, anybody who reads Bacon's work, the Antediluvian Atlantis, which he utilizes as a metaphor, is depicted by him as laying just beyond, guess what, the twin pillars of Hercules. So, symbolically, the twin towers in New York as pillars echoed to occultists, to esotericists, this Rosicrucian Masonic dream archetype where the pillars of Hercules or Enoch or Solomon represented passageways beyond which, once you travel, then you can reclaim what Masons believe, was lost in Atlantis. This was a time known to the Greeks as the Golden Age of Osiris, and to the Egyptians as Zetepi. And since you've read my book, you know that I go into this whole thing about Osiris. And they even, I think, Dr. Monteith, left glaring, hidden in plain sight, prophecies about where we were going to go. The greatest, of course, of all of them, being the Great Seal of the United States of America, which is on every U.S. $1 bill in America, and most people have absolutely no clue what symbolism on that Great Seal represents. And once they do, and they will learn this in this new book, Apollyon Rising 2012, they're going to be absolutely flabbergasted. And it's not me making it up, it's what the actual symbols represent. It's what the mottos on the seal represent, not just what they represent, what they were taken from, where they come from in ancient mythology, and what they mean, and what they say to us today. And then even more extraordinary than all that is what the Bible has to say about all this. It's absolutely... I think it's going to blow people away.
Well, I'm sure it will. It's an amazing book, and I'm really looking forward to helping you get that circulated, because it will raise the questions in people's minds. Could it be that what we are seeing is the unfolding of ancient prophecies? Is everything going on today following a timeline and a master plan? And I really believe that it is.
Well, I think that there are certainly people who are dedicated. Of all of the Masonic symbols in the United States, we mentioned Manly P. Hall earlier, 33rd degree Freemason, Manly P. Hall. By the way, The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, is that the only book that you offer?
No, we have his Secret Destiny of America. We carry his secret teachings of all ages and lectures on ancient philosophy. I think those are the main ones we offer. But this gives people an excellent cross-section of who this man is, as he tells us in his book. We hide our symbols in plain sight, and you see them, and you have no idea what you're looking at. And we do. We see their emblems every day, and we don't recognize them, but they're there. Ready to demonstrate among themselves how stupid the average people are, and impress how these people of superior intellect are carrying out and working to fulfill of the ancient plan of the ages.
Well, hidden in plain sight. I mean, what could be more true than the Great Seal of the United States? And this Great Seal, Manly Hall, said was referred to it as the highest signature of occult planning by Freemasons, and he was a high-level Freemason, so it was most extraordinary. Of course, much of what he wrote was never intended to be read by the public at large, but time has gone on, and now it's been made public. But he referred to the Great Seal of the United States on the U.S. $1 bill now as the signature, quote, the signature of this exalted body unseen and for the most part unknown. And then he went on to say, the unfinished pyramid upon its reverse side is a trestle board setting forth symbolically the task to the accomplishment of which the United States government was dedicated from the day of its inception, end quote. What an extraordinary statement from Freemasonry's most revered philosopher.
And, of course, we find certain Christians, leaders, saying, oh, that eye, you know, in the triangle above the unfinished pyramid, well, that's the eye of God. And they're absolutely right. But, of course, what they're talking about is a different God. And until people,
right,
when you look at the emblem on the back of the dollar bill and you say, in God we trust, people do not understand that these people believe in two gods. And, of course, this goes back to the ancient Gnostic beliefs, which are simply coming to the fore today as we see the concept that there is the true God, who is Lucifer, and then there is the inferior God, that is the God of the Bible. And these people worship Lucifer. This is what people really don't understand.
Well, it wasn't until the 1930s that, and this I think may be by providence, the significance of the Great Seal of the United States started finding its defining moment. And how it happened was occult-minded 32nd degree Mason Henry Wallace Secretary of Agriculture for the United States in 1934. He became intrigued with the meaning behind the Great Seal. And he had been a disciple of Agni Yogi Society founder and Theosophist Nicholas Roerich, whose devotion to mysticism was pretty well known then, even more so well known today. But these people were focused really on apocalyptic themes surrounding the coming of a new world order. They thought it was their goal to launch this new world order. And that actually came to light publicly when Wallace was running as vice president in the 1940 presidential election, and he became threatened with embarrassment by the Republicans who had come into possession of a series of letters that had been written by Wallace in the 1930s to Roerich, in which he was referring to him as dear guru and describing the anticipation that he was feeling for the breaking of the new day. This was a time when a mythical kingdom was going to arrive on Earth, accompanied by a special breed of people. And the Democrats, they barely kept those letters from the public by making threats of their own. And, of course, Wallace went on to become the 33rd Vice President of the United States under the 32nd President, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was himself a 32nd degree Mason and also had an equal thirst for mysticism. And, of course, Roosevelt, he's the one credited with setting in motion the push to place the Great Seal on the U.S. $1 bill. But it was actually Wallace who had brought the seal's significance to Roosevelt, because he believed that the symbolism of the emblems carried inference to their period of time, to their, you know, their New Deal, their New World Order. I think he didn't realize that he was just the first stone in the foundation towards a greater scheme. But the point is, these people were entirely dedicated what's now known, Dr. Monteith. Wallace actually viewed the unfinished pyramid on the Great Seal of the United States with the all-seeing eye hovering above it. He viewed that as a prophecy about the dawn of a new world with America at its head, just exactly what we're potentially seeing today. I mean, they believed that whenever the United States awoke during a time of international calamity, catastrophe, chaos, that something would occur that would raise the United States beyond even its military dominancy, and that the United States would assume its position as the new capital of the world. That's what they believed. And they believed that when that happened, the grand architect would return. And metaphorically, then, the all-seeing eye would be fitted atop the Great Seal Pyramid as the finished apex stone. So what they understood the Great Seal of the United States to be was literally a prophecy about the coming of a world, a single world, global leader. And there's going to be a substantial amount of information in the final version of my book, Apollyon Rising 2012, about that. And it's interesting because Wallace and Roosevelt, they saw this unfinished pyramid on the Great Seal as pointing to not just the return, but the reincarnation, the coming back of something that had existed once before, a Masonic god whose coming was going to cap the pyramid and launch the New World Order. And you mentioned this this all-seeing eye in the Great Seal, and that how the Christians look at that, and in God we trust, and isn't this wonderful, it's all Christian. Look, the all-seeing eye on the Great Seal is the eye of Horus. This is the offspring of Osiris. Sometimes Osiris himself, according to mythology. And Wallace and Roosevelt understood that. Now, whether Roosevelt and Wallace also comprehended the prophecy that until the publishing of this new book, Apollyon Rising 2012, has been hidden from public view concerning the coming of Apollo and what the Bible has to say about this, whether they understood that, I don't know. I mean, I suspect they may have understood it because in Freemasonry, the legend of Harimba Beef, the original Masonic Grand Master and architect of Solomon's Temple, and whom Manly Hall, whose books you have for sale through Radio Liberty, referred to as coming back, being resurrected. He actually refers to him as coming back to conclude the construction of the new temple. All of that is really a retelling of the mythos of Isis and Osiris, who are also known in history as Apollo, and this whole resurrection motif. And every Freemason listening to me talking tonight knows that what I'm saying is true. And now, why that's of the utmost importance, Dr. Monteith, is if quasi-political, philosophical, and other leaders in the United States have, since at least the 1930s, been anticipating the arrival of this supreme being, then, Dr. Monteith, I mean, we're standing on a very disturbing precipice right now.
In fact, not only that, but of course, the leaders of Iran today are waiting for the return of the Mahdi. Of course, this is, I believe, the same spiritual being. And the Hindus are waiting for the return of Krishna, and the Buddhists are waiting for a return of Maitreya. The Jews are waiting for the return of their Messiah, who is not the Christian Messiah. Yes, I believe we are really on the verge of some of the most important events in world history. And unless you look at what's going on today, not as political or ideological, but through the lens and the prism of the Bible and prophecy, why, nothing really makes any sense. Well, we're going to be back. Well, our guest is Tom Horn. Tom is going to be speaking at our conference on October 25th. I hope you're going to be there. Well, Tom, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, because you have to, it's hard to wrap up what you've covered, but at least hopefully you're going to entice people to want to get that book. And how soon will it be out?
Look, I'm hoping that we will have early review copies of that book early in November. I should let you know that we have decided as a company, as a publishing house, that we are going to launch a grand national champion, I mean a grand national challenge. This challenge is going to revolve around deciphering a certain riddle that we are going to put forth. Who solves the riddle will win $10,000 in cash, also an item of historic value. This item was in the United States of America when George Washington was the president, and it was of great importance then and is today. Actually has great numerical value as well. We have inherited it. We're going to make it available. But more information will be forthcoming on that. Maybe I can say more about that when I'm back on the radio with you in the future. That's going to be related to the release of this book, which is going to, we hope to have copies in November. The nationally advertised release date is January 1. The online nationally advertised release date is December 23rd, which is a playoff of the, December 21st, which is a playoff of the Mayan calendar end date. But that's when we hope to have it. And as soon as we have copies in print, of course, I will be sending you copies. And you did write the introduction for this book, which I'm very, very thankful for. It's actually a huge honor, Dr. Monteith, that you had read the book and were willing to risk putting your name in it.
Well, I think it's a great book, and I think it's going to hopefully open the eyes of an awful lot of people. You've done a tremendous amount of work getting all that information together, and I have learned a great deal from it, and it helps to put things into perspective. Tom, we're out of time. God bless you for all you've done, and we'll look forward to talking to you. I think we have you on next Monday.
Yeah, I'll be glad to be back on Monday. I want to encourage people to get a hold of Radio Liberty, to get a hold of The Lost Keys of Freemasonry by Manly Hall, and some of those other works, which will very much help them to understand what we were talking about tonight.
And, of course, none of this should be strange to the American people. The only reason it is because of the degree of control that can over what American people think. Bye-bye, Tom. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope you enjoyed our interview with Tom Horn. I will tell you, this is a fascinating book, Apollyon Rising, and we'll be carrying it certainly as soon as it comes out. Well, this is the time when I certainly want to remind you that on the 25th of October, that's a Sunday, we're going to have an all-day conference at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and Tom will be one of the speakers, Catherine Albrecht, Will Grigg, a great lineup of speakers. I can promise you an exciting time, but you're going to have reservations. If you're coming from elsewhere, give us a call and at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Make your reservation, and because we do have a block of rooms reserved at a decreased price, and of course, you certainly will want to be having lunch with us that day. We are serving lunch, so we have to know how many people are going to be there. If you want more information on what Tom was talking about, we have three great videos. We call them the Secret Mystery Series. Actually, they're available in DVD. And, of course, one is The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. The second is entitled The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, because it is filled with occult emblems. Why is then America's Christian capital filled with occult emblems? Because there's a strong occult influence here. There has been since the inception. And then the last is the Eye of the Phoenix goes into the occult emblems on the back of the dollar bill. Not just the pyramid, but it is all occultic. And they hide their emblems in plain sight. We do carry, of course, the books by Manly P. Hall. You have to ask for them specifically, and the one we quoted today, The Lost Keys of Freemasonry. We have so much information. We have, of course, a DVD, Mason, Friend or Foe. We have the DVD on going into the background of the supernatural. That's the supernatural. We have a four-tape set on the supernatural. We have a book written by Johanna Michelson, who was actually involved in supernatural healings, and she saw people cured of cancer, and suddenly people who had brain tumors, and she had saw people who were blind, and then they could see again. But she didn't understand this was all the demonic power that was being tapped into. Eventually, she went back to see the people, and they were all demonically possessed. The book is The Beautiful Side of Evil. We have the book Hostage to the Devil, written by Malachi Martin, if you haven't read it. It was the first book I read back in about 1980 that introduced me to the other dimension. That's Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin. Certainly we carry the material on going into the background of satanic crimes. We have a 4-CD set on satanic crimes. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and you can certainly get our a list of all the DVDs and books and other items we carry, except those that are on the special occult list. You'll have to request those. We have a book written by Wayne Peterson, who along with many of his friends from the occult are waiting in Henderson, Nevada for the return of their Messiah. That the book goes into the background of David Rockefeller, goes into the background of Gorbachev. It's written by a man, of course, who is deeply involved in the occult, former government official, high government official, named Wayne Peterson. A book, as I remember, Extraordinary Times, Extraordinary People. And what is David Rockefeller doing associating with somebody deeply involved in the occult? David Rockefeller, who leads the Council on Foreign Relations, is the honorary chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, a permanent member of the Bilderbergers, and of course, firmly committed to population control and world government. Well, we live in a strange world. You need to get our information. Our number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.